This is Wolf's Campfire, and you're about to listen to Three Scary Hiking Stories, Volume 1. You can also check me out on YouTube at youtube.com/wolfscampfire. Now with that said, whether you're sitting around a campfire, on the night shift, or even laying in bed, let my voice soothe your nightmares. I went backpacking in a national park. I don't think I'll ever go back. Written by Riggs195. My name is John. I have always been an avid hiker and camper. Growing up, I was taught everything you need to know to survive in the woods. My father taught me how to shoot, hunt, and plenty of bushcraft. Recently, I had gotten into backpacking and I really enjoyed it. I would try to go with friends, but most of the time I ventured solo, so I could go my own pace. After graduating college, I decided to go backpacking at a national park that I had always wanted to go into, in the Sierras, none other than Yosemite. So, after telling family where I was going and getting everything I need to survive out there for a few weeks, I made my way. It's about a 10-hour drive, but I eventually made it, and my God, was this place beautiful. After a few days of hiking, everything went smoothly, and I even saw a few deer, got some good fish, and was really enjoying the great outdoors. Things started getting weird after the first 5 days, though. Normally, the sound of bugs and little critters at night accompanied me, but there were moments where it was completely silent, like absolutely no sound at all. What kind of spooked me was I would sometimes see weird lights in the distance that I thought were other backpackers, but it didn't look like normal lights from flashlights, more like orbs of light moving around. After a few more days had passed, and I ran into another hiker. Her name was Sandy, and she was a pretty girl, 22, just like me. We made small talk, and she asked if I wanted to hike together, since we were going the same route. I agreed, and we spent a few days hiking together, as a matter of fact. At night, during a campfire, I asked her if she saw any strange lights at night, and she said she thought she did, but took it as a distant backpacker. I didn't press on about it, and just went on with the night. The next day, we went our separate ways since I decided I was going back to the lodge to stock up on supplies. I then made camp at the furthest campground near a family with a small child. This is where things got really, really weird. It was late, and the family was going to bed, and I was hanging out by my campfire, having myself a few beers. Later, the fire became basically embers. I didn't want to go to bed yet, so I was just sitting outside enjoying the peaceful sounds of the night, when suddenly, it went really quiet again, that same eerie quietness as before. Then, I saw some movement by the family's camp. I couldn't really tell due to distance and the dark, but I heard a zipper being undone. I made the decision to shine my light near their campsite. Normally, this would be rude, but something did not feel right, and I could have sworn I saw a figure of something near their tent. It couldn't have been the parents, since I saw them go to bed with their child when my fire was dying. Once my light got near the figure, I saw something big, like a bear, but it didn't look like a normal bear. Then, as I moved the light right on the tent, it had the child in its arm, and darted out of the campsite so fast, faster than anything that size could move. I was shocked, but I got my composure together real quick and blew my survival whistle. Tent lights began to turn on from nearby, and the family woke up in what I could tell was a panicked, "Where is he?" referring to the child. I yelled that someone abducted him, and I joined them to go alert the park ranger. A search and rescue were immediately started. I don't know if they ever found the kid or not. All I did was give my side of the story, and once I was cleared, I went back to my travels. I mean, I was getting tired when this happened, so it could have been a bear. But the way it had the kid in its arm, bears don't do that to people. I quickly left that area the following day, and though it was really hard for me, I hoped for the best for the family. This next story really creeped me out, not to the point where I ended my trip, but really made me question if I should continue on. It was late dusk. I was fishing near a river, hoping to get a few fish for dinner. Then, at the corner of my eye, I saw across the river those same lights in the sky. Closer this time. I gazed back towards the river, and I shit you not, I saw what appeared to be two figures walking near the fire pit I made. They were skinny, about 7 feet tall, and had really big hands and making some sort of clicking sounds. I noped the hell out of there and decided I would camp elsewhere that night. Safe to say, I didn't sleep much that night at all. This is the last story I have of my trip that pretty much sealed the deal for me. Out of all the weird things I saw, this I can't explain. I ran into Sandy by sheer luck. Asked her how she was and if anything weird has happened since we went our separate ways. She said no and was kind of worried about my question, and asked me what did I mean by weird. I told her about the family with the missing child, and she had the face of someone who just heard their family member got cancer. I didn't mention the entities by the river, as I didn't want to frighten her. She said she and her friend Emily had been backpacking and were going to the top of some dome, and asked if I wanted to join. I agreed, and we made our way to hike that day to the top of this dome peak. After a night of having a few drinks and good conversation, we all went to bed. In the middle of the night, I had to pee really bad, so I unzipped my tent, got out and did my business, and right as I made my way back, I saw Emily just standing there by a cliff looking out. I asked her what the hell she was doing, as it was quite late. She didn't say anything, but I have to go. I told her, "Go where? It's really late, you should go to bed. And don't get too close to the edge, you're gonna fall off." She only responded, "I'm okay, I'll be back to bed soon." I found this whole conversation odd, but decided to just go back to bed. In the morning, I was awoken by Sandy. She was in a panic tone and said, "John, where's Emily?" I said, "She's not in her tent. Maybe she went to look at the view." "She was out last night doing that." But when we looked, she wasn't there. We couldn't find any trace of her friend. We looked for an hour in the woods nearby, calling for her name, but no answer. We were about to call an SOS when we came back to our campsite. We saw Emily, right by the same cliff I saw her at last night. Sandy shouted, "Emily, where did you go? We thought we lost you." Emily didn't respond. She looked like she was in a trance and began making her way closer to the edge of the cliff. Sandy said in a concerned voice, "Emily? What are you doing? Get back here, you're going too close to the..." Right as she was at the edge, she broke out of her trance and turned her head to Sandy and backed her feet in a look of confusion. Emily said, "What? Why am I outside of my tent?" She took a step back and turned to make her way back to us. Sandy spoke, "What are you talking about, Emily?" But after Emily took that first step back to us, she... I can't explain it other than one moment she was making her initial step to go back to our campsite, and then, the next, she was flung straight into the air like a rag doll by some unknown force. Emily screamed. Sandy screamed, "Emily!" I was in a state of shock, and then we heard a loud but distant thud. We didn't even bother to grab our gear, just grabbed Sandy's hand and told her, "We need to leave now." Sandy was in shock, tears in her eyes, but I broke her out of her state of shock by telling her to run. She managed to pull herself together, and we ran. We ran for what felt like hours, but eventually, we made it back to the lodge. The staff asked if everything was okay, and I just said, in an out-of-breath tone, "Call the Rangers! Our friend fell off a cliff!" It's been a few days since then. Sandy and I spoke to the Rangers and search and rescue personnel, and told them where Emily had fallen. At first, they thought we could have had something to do with it, but given how far she fell off that cliff, or thrown, I should say, and us passing the polygraph test, we were cleared of suspicion. What was even more strange was the Rangers immediately dropped their investigation and began to call in the FBI. The sheriff sat me down and asked me simply, "Son, what really happened out there?" I couldn't hold it in any longer. I told him what really happened, and when he asked Sandy if this was true, she agreed. The sheriff took a long sigh and said, "That's what I figured. No way anyone could have pushed her that far off that cliff, let alone other things we found." I said, "What other things?" He only replied with, "That is none of your concern. The FBI will take over from here. I probably do not need to tell you this, but I highly advise you call the rest of your trip off." We were let go and given a hotel for the night to stay at to gather our composure. But before leaving, I spoke to a search and rescue officer and I asked them if they found Emily. He said they did, but it was strange. Having fallen off the cliff, one would think they would find her body in such a way it was clear they died from a fall. But he said they found her body, but that her eyes and tongue were completely gone. That's all I could get out of him. The following day, Sandy and I exchanged contact info and went our separate ways. Before we left, she grabbed my hand and said, "I'm really glad I met you, John, and I'm sorry our trip had to end this way. But I'm glad we made it out alive. I won't forget you. Please, be safe." She gave me a hug, kissed my cheek, and got in her car and drove off. I since have been doing a lot of reading on missing persons cases, primarily missing 411, and realized that there is a surge of missing people in this national park, as well as others. The incident with Emily is very similar to a few cases I have come across. I do still hike and backpack. Sometimes Sandy joins me too, even though with my new perspective and safety measures, the way Emily was flung off that cliff in Yosemite, I don't think I'll ever go back. The Trail is Why I Stopped Hiking, written by J.P. Carver. Here's the truth as I know. There are things that happened in this world that can't be explained, and just because you don't believe in something doesn't mean it can't hurt you. I had heard tales of the trail for years. Every old-time hiker I ran into had a story about their time on the trail, how they were just dropped into it without warning, and they were never the same again. Most of the time, they barely made it out alive. A bunch of weed cooked up bullshit, I thought. It wasn't bullshit, though. I found myself on that trail this past July, and it was their stories that kept me alive. I've spoken to no one about this before, as I don't want to be that hiker girl that others walk into the poison ivy to avoid. But more and more people are going out, which means the trail is going to pick some of them, and they are going to go in unprepared. The trail doesn't suffer idiots and newbies, it eats them. First, know that the trail takes who it wants, when it wants, from wherever it wants. If you are going out, even for a day hike, make sure you bring enough supplies to last at least 3 nights. That's the average time the trail takes to get through. According to most of those that survived, this means food, water, and shelter. You won't realize you're on the trail until you're already deep in it, so there is no going back and no restocking. Do not take anything from the trail unless given or offered to you. Water is fine to take from the streams. Food, if your only other option is to die because it probably will kill you anyway. There are signs that you are on the trail. The first one that just about everyone mentions is the map stand sitting in the middle of a fork in the trail. You won't miss it because it'll be the cleanest damn thing you ever see in the woods. Not a lick of dirt or water damage on it, or any of the pamphlets. As if God had just dropped the stupid thing there moments before you came upon it. Don't take one. Pretend it's not there if you have to. Do not take a map. Remember, take nothing unless given. Past the map stand, you'll probably come across more of the pamphlets littering the ground. These, I think, were left behind by those who didn't follow the advice above. You'll be curious to know why they're all there. I was. But the best option is to walk into the brush and continue on. If you're feeling brave, you can look up. I don't recommend it, though. I still have nightmares. Stay in the brush until you reach a cross-shaped tree with a little rag doll nailed to the front. As you near the tree, the nail will fall and the doll will tumble onto the path. Pick it up. This counts as being given. Here you get back on the dirt path and you stick to it like glue for the rest of the day. There is a little girl in a dirty nightgown that will follow you from off the trail. The doll is hers and she will cry and beg for you to give it back. Put the doll in your pack and ignore her. She'll disappear when you reach the creek. Cross the creek at the shallowest part. The water plays tricks and is much deeper than it looks. There is an undercurrent that can easily pull you down to the bottom. The woman who told me about the current barely made it out, and she is now deathly afraid of water. She said that it's not just the current. There are things down there that will grab you as well. I didn't ask her what she meant by things. That's it for the first day. Keep hiking until it gets dark. Don't worry about your pace. Darkness will settle in when you reach a certain point. Make sure you bring a headlamp, as you'll probably want to go 15 minutes farther after dark before making camp. For me, I could hear footsteps on the trail a few yards behind me, and I went 15 extra minutes and the sound stopped. I don't know what will happen if you set up camp as it's getting dark. With the trail, footsteps could mean anything. If it's cold out, keep the fire as small as possible. One guy I spoke to made a huge fire the first night, thinking that it would keep anything dangerous away. He's now missing an arm. The next day, get up with the sun. Electronic devices don't really work on the trail, and if they do, they can't be trusted, so you can't really set an alarm. You probably won't sleep the first night anyways. The dogs will keep you up with their howls and barks. They're feasting on something that cries out once in a while. Don't go looking for what it is. Stick to the trail for at least 2 miles. After that, the trail will split. I don't have a definitive answer on which way to go. Some people have had 5 ways, some only 2. Pick the one you think is best. Just keep in mind that on the trail, not everything is as it seems. From here, things will probably be a bit different for you depending on which trail you picked. It's now down to a bit of luck and using your head. For me, the trail almost claimed me on that split. It showed me a family member who was hurt. I stupidly tended to them and got a knife in my backpack for it. I never killed anything before, let alone someone that looked like my little brother. I did on the trail. You'll come out on the other side of the split. Some other hikers tried different trails of the split. One told me they got out on the second day by doing this. The rest wish they had kept going forward. Just as the sun is setting, you'll notice a fire off the side of the trail. A woman will be sitting at it, stoking it with a branding iron. She'll offer for you to join her. I got the impression that not doing so would be a bad idea, so I suggest you do the same as me and sit. Stay as long as you are able to, and don't look bored. She branded my forearm for yawning. It burns terribly when I think of the trail. She'll offer you food. It's not bad, so eat it. Once finished, you can get up, and she'll only watch you silently as you return to the trail. Continue on until you reach the briar patch. The briar patch stretches for what looks like miles in either direction. The only way to move forward is to go through. The thorns change the further you go, and if you aren't wearing long sleeves and pants, you will be torn up before you can make it halfway. That's when the thorns change completely to what look like little mouths. They dart out from beneath the leaves, bell-shaped things colored yellow and purple, and like leeches, they will attach to you. Remove them as fast as you can, or you probably won't make it out of the patch. Be careful, as they will sometimes squirt your blood back at you, and being blinded by it will only make getting out harder. The last thing on the third day is probably the easiest and hardest thing. You should come to a house in the middle of the woods. I heard crying from it. Others hear screams or strange voices. This is what you need the doll for. There won't be a trail anymore, and entering the woods will just bring you back to the house. For me, the front door was blocked, as were the windows, which left the open basement doors as my only option. Through the basement, I found strange items from hanging knives to children toys. Somewhere, a record player played only static. I found the stairs to the first floor. Following the crying, it led me to the second floor and to a door that was tightly closed. Using my shoulder to open it, I found a burnt-out room. The wooden walls and floor still had embers glowing. There was a heat haze that burned my throat as I breathed. Sitting in the center of the room was a tiny cradle, and the girl that had appeared off the trail. She stared at me, eyes just as hot as the embers in the room. She looked almost devilish as she sat there. She rocked the cradle slowly. The heat in the room was growing by the second. All the cuts and nicks from the sticker bushes itched and burned, and I wiped sweat from my forehead as I looked around the room. It got so bad that I could feel the soles of my boots becoming soft. I didn't know what she wanted until I remembered the doll. I dug it out of my pack and placed it gently into the cradle. As I straightened, I found myself on the trail again, a light breeze drying the sweat from my skin. This may not be the same thing that happens to you, but it seems she just wants the doll. On the final day, there is only one last thing to be worried about. you'll come to a clearing covered in a red substance that I can only assume is blood, but it bubbles on the bushes and tall grass. But that isn't the strangest bit. At the end of the clearing will be a mirror at least 10 feet wide and 6 high. As you approach, you should see 2 reflections in the mirror. One of you that follows you as it should, the second will be waiting for you. It'll do nothing at first, at least mine didn't. But as soon as I was level with it, I felt the coldness of metal against my neck. In a flash, the strange reflection had moved to be behind me, and in her hand was a blade. She spoke, but I couldn't hear the words. It took a few seconds to understand what she was saying. You see, on the mirror are words that you have to say out loud. It will be your deepest, darkest secret, or at least one of them. Your reflection is asking you if it is your darkest secret, and if you say no, you have to say that instead. Either way, be honest. The knife at your throat should be enough warning not to test the mirror. If you pass this, then the mirror should become transparent. Walk to the mirror and step through and pray that your trip on the trail was as short as mine. Every story I've heard ends with the mirror, but that doesn't mean that others that didn't survive had other experiences. This isn't a list of everything, only those things I've experienced myself. The trail changes, and you could face all of these or none of these. Be careful if you still decide to go hiking. I, for one, will stay away from the trails from now on. All of them. Something attacked us when we went hiking in the woods, and I'm probably going to go missing for knowing about it. Written by SJ20442. If you're reading this, I'm probably missing or dead. You can't briefly describe the indescribable. So, I resolved to recount everything that happened to the three of us. Exactly how it happened, to ensure that the truth remains out there one way or another, regardless of what happens to me. My name's Cole Gray. In October of 2018, my friends and I organized a hiking trip into the woods nearby for a few days over the school holidays, where we encountered something that is now permanently burnt into my mind. My account begins early April, the middle of week 11. We were 16 at the time, and God, we hated school. Our peers were callous, imbecile assholes. The teachers were overworked, and as a result, they were quick to anger and overly strict. The facilities weren't updated at least within a decade. We were in English when I got a text from Alec reading, "It's on." We knew what he was on about. Alec came late that day, opened the door, trudged over to where we were sitting, and flopped under the chair like a corpse, the teacher giving him a death glare all the while. She yelled at him, something about disrespect. I wasn't really listening. I was more interested in what Alec had to say. Alec looked over at us with a grin on his face. They said we could do it. Alec's father was an outdoor enthusiast, an interest which Alec had inherited. He'd had the idea of us spending a few days by ourselves in the forest near Alec's house. It was a decent size, something like 200 square kilometers. There was even a lake that we planned on going fishing in. I'm not sure how Alec talked us into it. He was charismatic, I guess. A normal parent wouldn't have allowed that, but we lived in a small town, and ours worked a lot, hence our independence was encouraged from an early age. Not to mention the fact that Alec was perfectly competent in everything we'd require. We all organized hiking bags. I packed a sleeping bag, a tent, lots of water, canned food, a portable stove, survival knife, compass, fishing rod, lighter. You get the picture. Our plan was to set off into the woods on Friday and make our way about 15 kilometers in, although Alec's father did say not to go past the lake. I guess I need to explain why. On the outskirts of town, there was some sort of facility. There was only one dirt road going to and from it, cutting through the woods. It could be found about a kilometer north of the lake. Those who had braved the hike through the forest reported that it was sealed off from the outside world via an absurdly heavy-duty concrete wall surrounding the entire compound. It had to have been at least 4 or 5 meters tall, they would say. It was besmirched with graffiti from those who had adrenaline-fueled impulsiveness required to go looking for it. The top of the wall was heavy bestrode with angled spikes in an overhanging tangle of razor-sharp barbed wire to ensure with absolute certainty that no prying eyes would peer upon the compound's contents. All of this earned the building the townspeople's nickname for it, Alcatraz. Alcatraz's wall was absurdly overkill for the purpose of keeping people out. What the hell could they have possibly been keeping in there that warranted such a ludicrous aggregate of defense? Didn't occur to me at the time, it wasn't designed to keep us out, it was designed to keep something else out. It was a common occurrence to see trucks and black SUVs coming and going, definitely military and government. The SUVs were occupied by shady-looking men in black suits, the trucks with soldiers. The building was the obsession of those in the town interested in conspiracy theories. Their theories ranged from a containment facility for alien life, to a research facility specializing in human mind control experiments. You understand what I'm getting at. Hearing all of those theories fascinated me since I was young, but I never really believed any of it. God, was I wrong. The sheriff did attempt to learn what was inside at the behest of some of the most neurotic townspeople, only to be forced to turn back at gunpoint. The town nutters had a field day with that. Since no one was allowed inside, there was no way to know for sure what the compound was being used for. The frighteningly plausible theories and general mystery surrounding the place like a fine mist proved to be enough motivation for people to stay clear of the place, for the most part at least. There were those few people reckless enough to go looking, one or two of whom who didn't come back. People didn't like to talk about that. Everything went smoothly for the first part of the afternoon. We had noticed some trucks speeding along the main road in the direction of Alcatraz. It was common to see that, but there were more than the usual. That's weird, I remember thinking to myself. Alec elbowed me in the shoulder and chuckled. Maybe some of those aliens escaped from Alcatraz, eh, Cole? Ha ha, very funny. We settled on ditching school early, leaving at 3 and walking until it got dark, before setting up the tents. The forest was far more beautiful than I had imagined in the weeks leading up to our expedition. The forest floor and the trees were dense with the oranges, yellows, and browns of the autumn leaves. The trees stretched up so tall into the sky that the tops had reduced to being barely visible from our perspective. It was cloudy, the golden sunlight of the dim autumn afternoon bleeding through the cracks in the canopy high above our heads. The forest was alive with the calming sounds of birds chirping quietly around us, the chilly October wind sifting through the trees. All I can say is that it was truly an experience to behold. We found a good little clearing at about 7 that night. 4 hours of walking had taken its toll on my feet for sure. Alas, the work for that night wasn't yet complete. While Alec set up the tents, he had Dom and I take the saw and go scrounging for firewood. I had collected a decently sized bundle when my nose was accosted by the foulest thing I've ever smelt. The odor was unfamiliar, but I recognized it regardless as the reminiscent stench of death. I looked to my left and dropped the kindling I had spent the last quarter hour collecting in sheer disgust and shock at the horrific scene before me. Shit. A deer, I think. It was hard to tell. The poor thing had been absolutely mauled, eviscerated beyond recognition. Its head was almost torn clean off, attached only by the sinew of the back of its neck. The rib cage had been torn apart, the entrails scattered all over the ground before it, some of it even splattered on the adjacent trees. I called Dom and Alec over, and upon seeing it, they both reared up and groaned in disgust. If anyone knew what was responsible for this act of animalistic savagery, it was Alec. I shot him a look. His face was painted with fear and confusion, not something I had seen before. Alec, any idea what could have done this? No bloody clue. This isn't like anything I've seen before. By the way he spoke to me, I could tell he was truthful in that he had no idea. A bear could have done this, but predators kill for food and this thing hasn't been eaten. Dom chimed in. This is so messed up. I didn't get much sleep that night. I don't think the others did either. The morning was spent exploring, but everything looked the same. So, we tried not to stray too far from camp. The lake had a jetty, so we went down and did some fishing. We didn't catch much. The day descended into night, and it would have been a little past midnight. We were talking around the raging campfire when we heard it. Gunshots. Rapid. Probably from a rifle of some kind. Two separate sets of shots, and then there was a screech. That screech. Shrill and piercing. No way it was natural at all. It couldn't have come from more than a few hundred meters into the forest. Dom interrupted the pursuant silence. Jesus Christ, what was that? I don't think we want to know. Most would have turned tails and bolted in the opposite direction, but we had alcohol-fueled courage on our side, and hence we decided to go check it out. If only we had known just how bad the consequences of our stupid decision would be. We got our torches from our bags and trudged off into the darkness. After 7 minutes of looking, we came to where we thought the unholy screeching had come from. I strained my ears to listen, and nothing. Drip. I felt something warm on my shoulder. Drip. I used my fingers to wipe it off and placed them under the light of my torch. Blood. Still warm. I pointed my torch upwards and recoiled in horror, too shocked to scream. So did the others. It was a body. Human. Dressed in what looked like military clothing. It was impaled on a broken branch only meters above the ground, both of its arms gone. His throat had been torn out. There were deep lacerations all over its torso. Alex stared in shock, unable to rip his eyes away from the horror before us. Dom put his hands over his mouth and started quietly sobbing to himself. I rolled over and vomited all over the ground. As horrific as the mangled corpse was, I heard sinister growling noise about 50 meters ahead and looked up from the contents of my stomach to see something much, much worse. Hunched over, eating what could only have been another corpse, was something that will infest my nightmares until the day I die. It was skeletal, as gangly as a rake, twitching erratically. It had antlers on the top of its head that had no earthy right to be there. With skin as pale as the full moon, it was on all fours with its arms and legs bent at horrifically unnatural angles. The others noticed it as well. I knew because Dom's quiet sobbing was quickly replaced by deathly silence. I spoke shakily. What in God's name is that? I realized we were there, and bellowed out the same infernal shrill screech that we had heard before. I yelled out in apprehensive realization of what I had just brought upon us. Shit! The thing closed the distance between us, and in seconds, with sporadic, terrifying fast bursts, alternating between the ground and the trees. I stumbled back, tripped over a root, and within the blink of an eye, the ungodly creature was on top of me, pinning me down by my arms. I screamed in pain at its knife-like claws, digging into my forearms. It was humanoid, however, anything but. Its piercing eyes were all-consumingly black, and its mouth was lined with crooked, freakishly long and horrifying sharp teeth. It opened its hideous mouth impossibly wide, and shrieked deafeningly loud into my face. I swear, I saw my life flash before my eyes, as it was about to tear into me, when it shrieked in pain. Alec had stabbed it in the back with his knife before it turned from me, grabbed him, and sunk its teeth into his neck as he let out a blood-curdling scream that I can still feel resonating through my skull. No! I stumbled over to it, grabbed hold of the knife's hilt, and with all the panic force I could gather, I wrenched it from the thing's back and stabbed it again as deep as I could, choking up the forest with its angry shrieks. It let go of Alec and stumbled to the side, but I was too late. My friend was dead. Dom and I looked at each other. I took one last look at my friend before we started in the opposite direction. I looked back and saw it pulling the knife out of its back, black with blood. I looked over at Dom. Hide! Hiding would typically be a bad decision, but there was no way in hell we could have outrun that thing. We both hid behind respective trees, and waited a few seconds, and slowly looked back toward it on the left side of the tree. Nothing. I looked to the right and was forced to freeze before I had a chance to reinsert myself behind cover. It stood upright at well over 2 meters tall, and within a meter of my face, it had to have seen me. It was blind. It shrieked, listening intently, and it took all of my willpower to stop myself from panicking. The night wind, the only thing to mask the sound of my shallow breathing. Dom and I locked eyes, and I mouthed a warning. It's blind. Don't move. He nodded shakily in recognition. I don't know if what happened next was a sympathetic act, or an otherwise cruel god of just life-saving coincidence, but it started storming, hard. The sound seemed to confuse and enrage it, because it started to shriek and swing its claws around aimlessly. We took the chance and backed away, which turned into full-on running. This time, I didn't look back as the hellish shrills faded into the distance. We ran until I tripped over. I must have hit my head on a rock or something like it, because I remember the feeling of blood trickling down my face while everything around me faded into blackness. The next thing I remember was waking up in a hospital bed. Dom had dragged me back to our camp and hidden me as best as he could while he went to go get help. We were both questioned by a couple of men in suits, except they weren't from the sheriff's department. They were the same men that we had seen in those black SUVs. They said only that they were from the nearby. I couldn't help but wonder if they somehow had something to do with the thing in the forest. They claimed to have done a preliminary investigation, but I was shocked and angered to hear that they had declared it a bear attack. It was at this point that we both knew something was amiss. We tried looking into it, but the suits informed us that it was a closed case, implying that it wouldn't end well for us if we didn't leave it. I heeded the warning, but Dom didn't. No one's heard from him in days. I'm writing this so people will know the truth if I go missing. I don't care how many therapists they make me see, how many drugs they make me take. They can threaten me all they want, but I know the truth of what happened in the forest.